morning when you rise? Do you think of me and how you left me crying? Wooden ships on the water, buried free.
Basically, I was keeping my chops up because I was sort of between bands. I was trying to get another one together, and it was a very crazy time.
Getting to the point where I'm no fun anymore, and it appears to be enough.
It was a strange time. It was a good time artistically. That much strong feeling. You know, civil rights too was still
civil rights
cooking
was
at that point.
Big issue.
And that much strong feeling about issues generates good art.
Would you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express?
Because it was obvious that what we just discovered in that moment was truly unique. Now then, we don't have any claim on the notes that we sing. Anybody can sing them, but nobody sounds like me, David and Stephen. Nobody.
Hi, I'm David Crosby.
Hi, I'm Stephen Stills.
I'm not high, but I'm Graham Nash, and you're in the studio with the three of us, with Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
In 1969, Time magazine had called Blind Faith the first supergroup earlier that year, with Cream's Eric Clapton and Ginger Baker teaming with Traffic's Steve Winwood. But with Blind Faith's grand total of 5 original songs and 1 disastrous tour to show for it, clearly the term supergroup should have been reserved for David Crosby of the Byrds, Stephen Stills of Buffalo Springfield, and Graham Nash of the Hollies. Each of them was a driving force in a rock band that had sold millions of records. They couldn't have known when they met in 1967 that their greatest triumphs were ahead of them. Couldn't have imagined how their fates would become so intertwined to this very day. Their paths finally crossed in the free-spirited part of Los Angeles, where all of the musicians hung out, in a place called Laurel Canyon. When Crosby, Stills, and Nash released their first album in June 1969, it was unlike anything else on the radio. Music driven by 3-part harmonies instead of electric guitars. Music that managed to be soothing and powerful all at the same time. Musicians who discovered themselves by finding each other. Here's David Crosby with me in the studio.
My first impression of Stephen Stills was Christopher Hillman. It's my old buddy from the Byrds.
Old buddy from the Byrds.
He came to me and he said, "Man, have you heard the Springfield?" I said, "No." Springfield who? Dusty Springfield?
Dusty Springfield, yeah.
He said, "No, Buffalo Springfield." I said, "Buffalo Springfield. This is a guy." He says, "No, it's a band." I said, "Well, no, I don't know nothing about him." He said, "Well, come on with me. Come on, come on." And he took me down to hear him. And here were these two guys talking to each other with electric guitars. I mean, yes, there was Richie Furay and the rest of the band.
Sure.
And they were playing good rock and roll. But there were these two guys talking to each other with electric guitars. I'm serious. They were playing harmony with each other. They were exchanging back and forth, you know, phrase for phrase, you know, not just trading force. They were talking to each other, you know. I mean, it was eloquent how they would musically interact with each other. It was fantastic. And I was stunned, you know, because I love music. It's my whole life. And I said, "Who are those guys?" He said, "Well, the blonde one's Stills, and the skinny, dark-haired one is Neil Young." And I said, "Uh-huh.
Get a number."
Get a number on those guys. Tag those two. You know, it's the same thing I did when I heard Nash's voice on the radio. I said, "Who was that?" You know, King Midas in reverse.
Yeah, King Midas.
Who sang that high part?
Well, it wasn't long before Crosby would find out. One of his best friends, the late Cass Elliott of the Mamas and the Papas, called David one night to say she was with someone that David really ought to meet. Cass didn't tell Crosby that this guy's name was Graham Nash.
My great, good friend, wise and funny and wonderful Cass Elliott, whom I wish we weren't missing at this point, brought him actually over to my house in Laurel Canyon. And didn't tell me who he was. I'm not sure whether that was his idea, whether he wanted to check me out without my knowing who he was, or what. But she didn't tell me who he was. She just said, this is my friend, you know.
He's smiling like the Cheshire Cat.
Yeah, well, that's him. I liked him a lot, you know. I thought he was a funny guy and obviously bright and stuff. And I didn't, you know, realize that it was this the very person that I was wondering who was that guy. When I did find out, I tagged him the way, same way I tagged Stephen and Neil. I said, oh, get a number on that one. You know, he's like, that's serious biz. Because I'm a harmony singer. I know when I hear one, you know. And I heard one that was, if anything, better than me. And I couldn't believe it.
I asked Graham if he remembered his first time hearing David Crosby's voice.
My first sonic impression of David Crosby was when somebody played me Mr. Tambourine Man. That was truly a great record. And right up with what the Hollies liked, harmony, 12 string, had an instantaneous feeling about it, like they went in the studio and they only had 10 minutes to do it, you know, which I like a lot. You know, I like that kind of
spontaneity,
feeling.
Spontaneity,
you
know? Go
yeah,
for
it. Right. I like the way they spelt birds, you know. I thought Crosby was a girl the first time I heard him. I thought there was a girl in the band. I did. I think that's the first time he's ever heard that. But I thought there was a girl in the band.
You're toast.
History now.
Your history.
Wait till tonight's show.
It's over for you.
Looking at the world through the sunset in your eyes. Traveling the train through clear Moroccan skies. Ducks and pigs and chickens call. Animal carpet wall to wall. American ladies 5 foot tall and webs from the edges of my mind. Had to get away to see what we could find. Hope the days that lie ahead bring us back to where they've led. Listen not to what's been said to you. Don't you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? Don't you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? They're taking me to Marrakesh, all on board. All on board the train.
I've been saving all my money just to take you there. I smell the garden in your hair. Take the train to Casablanca going south. Blowing smoke rings from the corners of my mouth. Colored coffees hang in the air. Charming cobras in the square. Strike your levers, we can wear at home. Well, let me hear you now.
Don't you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? Don't you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? They're taking me to Marrakesh. Don't you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? Don't you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? They're taking me to Marrakesh. All on board the train.
Was Marrakesh Express, a song that Graham Nash had written while he was still living in England before he'd even met Crosby or Stills. Nash's memory for detail is extraordinary, confirmed by his wonderful autobiography, Wild Tales. Graham remembers his first meeting with Crosby as if it were yesterday. Graham remembers leaving a record company party in Los Angeles to attend a Mamas and Papas recording session and then Cass Elliot whisking Graham away.
My first visual contact with this monster was about the end of 1966. Cass picked me up at the hotel in Los Angeles in a bright red convertible Porsche.
Oh.
And said to me, come here, I want you to meet somebody. And we drove to Laurel Canyon, which was probably about a 10-minute drive from the hotel. I come upon this typical Laurel Canyon house, an upper floor with the garage supported on pillars with a... I think it was a dark blue Porsche in the driveway. We went upstairs, opened the door, Cass slinging insults as she normally did.
With a grin, I'm sure.
And David returning them as he does, also with a grin. and introduced me to David Crosby. David at the time was lying, as I've seen him many, many times, in a prone position, had on a pair of blue jeans, no shoes, and a white and blue striped t-shirt. And that was my first, visual impression of David Crosby. We talked music for a while. He did, in fact, not know who I was. And it was fine with me, you know, because I was sort of not hiding, but I was interested in finding out who he was without the added burden of him knowing who I was. And he was very nice to me. He was very polite. I was a friend of Cassie's, and therefore I must be okay.
Right.
And that was my first impression of Crosby. And a little later, maybe 2 months later, when we returned to the United States, Crosby said, come here, I want to meet somebody. And we went to another house, I think also in Laurel Canyon. And the door opened on the living room. And there was an upright piano there with this guy sitting playing the piano, thumping the shit out of it. In a good way. I'd never heard a piano played with such ferocity, I think, is the word I'm looking for. Came to the end of the tune, and Crosby turned around and said, hey, Stills. This is my friend Graham Nash, and that's how I met Stephen.
49 reasons, all in a lie, all of them good ones, all of them lies. Drifting with my lady, we're oldest of friends, need a little work and there's fences to mend. Standing up, be my world, be my world. Miles is gone. I let that man play his hand. I let them know I was up to notice. I'm down on my knees. Nobody left to please. Now it's over, they left in the spring. Her and the drifter looking for beautiful. Yeah.
That's 49 Bye-Byes, a Stephen Stills song. By the time Nash came on the scene, Stills and Crosby were already close friends, prominent members of a group of musicians, artists that came to be known as the Laurel Canyon Rat Pack, a loose community of friends that also included the likes of Cass Elliot, Joni Mitchell, and John Sebastian, as well as frequent out-of-town visitors such as Paul Kantner of the Jefferson Airplane. In 1967, at the legendary Monterey Pop Festival, Crosby had accepted Stills' invitation to join Buffalo Springfield on stage, an act that may have hastened Crosby's departure from the Byrds. Monterey Pop is also the place where Stephen Stills met a guitar player who was to become a huge influence on him in the days after Buffalo Springfield broke apart.
Basically, I was keeping my chops up because I was sort of between bands. I was trying to get another one together, and it was a very crazy time. I mean, you got to remember that era in pop music was really, a lot of people lost their minds because there was a lot of, a lot of recreational chemicals running around, way too much, and everybody was having a wonderful time, getting just as torn as they possibly could. And also, we were selling, so many people were selling so many records. I mean, just zillions of records. And like, we were there treating everybody like God. And it was very easy to lose one's perspective. And the way I handled that at the time, not to say that I didn't lose my mind eventually, but then was to keep working. I mean, just keep busy. I mean, I would go to New York and I would do sessions. I would go hang out with Hendrix at the in Steve Paul's club. I would we would get in limousines and run up and down into Connecticut and down into Jersey looking for clubs to play in and stuff. And that's where I learned how to play lead guitar. I mean, Jimi Hendrix taught me how to play lead guitar, and we would sit and he was real patient, and he also was real encouraging. He said, yes, you can. Yes, you can. But the point is that the way to keep from going bonkers was to keep busy.
Leaving, you don't need us. sister, then by the hand, lead her away from this foreign land, far away where we'll not laugh again. We are leaving, you know, leaving. South on my shoulder, I guess I'll set a course and go.
Silver people on the shoreline. That would be technicians in radiation suits, seen through the eyes of the few post-apocalyptic survivors of a nuclear war. Up next, David, Stephen, and Graham return to reveal the first song they ever sang together. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and a lot more from Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Stephen Stills, Graham Nash, David Crosby for Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
In the morning, when you rise, do you think of me and how you left me crying? Are you thinking of telephones and men?
That's the Stephen Stills original demo for You Don't Have to Cry. Hi, I'm Redbeard. We're back in the studio with Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Here's Graham Nash.
Been with the Hollies for, you know, six years or something. We'd had our share of success, and we're still successful. But I wanted something more, and I decided to leave. I felt bad about it, but I had this yearning inside that I wanted to live in America and make music with David and Stephen, because by that time we had sung together, and this is now early 68. And we had definitely found that when we blended our voices, it was totally unique. And we knew that we could, if we put our mind to it, make a really fine album. And so I, at the time that I was being most discouraged with my scene with the Hollies, I was being most encouraged by my relationship with David and Stephen. And it was very easy for me to say that that I'd had it, that I must leave, I must leave. Sure. And so in December the 8th, 1968, I left the Hollies. And in December 10th, 1968, 2 days later, I was in Los Angeles for good.
Do you remember the first time you ever sang, not necessarily professionally, I mean the first time you ever sang with David Crosby and Stephen Stills? And do you remember what song it was and where you were?
Yes, in circumstance? I do.
What was it?
It was so exciting at that point that we would be able to sing together. The three of us have different memories about it, but it is for sure either Cassie's living room or Joni's kitchen. And we're not quite sure when the actual very first time was, because it was so exciting with the discovery of this sound that we have was so exciting. So the location is one of those two locations. The time is early 68, and the song is In the Morning When You Rise, which on the record was called You Don't Have to Cry. David and Stephen were singing these two songs, that and Helplessly Hoping. And I asked them to sing In the Morning again, and I listened. And I asked them once again. And on the third time of them singing it, I had my part down. And it sounded unbelievable, so much so that we stopped singing in the middle of the tune and started to laugh. Because we knew, because of the bright fellows that we are, that we had all left our bands. We didn't ever want to form another band again and be constricted that way. And here we were faced with having to form another band. Because it was obvious that what we just discovered in that moment was truly unique. Now then, we don't have any claim on the notes that we sing. Anybody can sing them, but nobody sounds like me, David, and Stephen. Nobody.
In the morning, when you rise, do you think of me
are living a reality. I left years ago, it quite nearly killed me. In the long run, it will make you cry, make you crazy, all before your time. And the difference between me and you, I won't argue right or wrong, but I have time to cry, my baby. You don't have to cry. I said cry, my baby. You don't have to cry. I said cry, my baby. You don't have to cry. In the morning when you rise, do you think of me and how you left me crying? Are you thinking of telephone managers and where you got to be at noon? You are living a reality. I left years ago, it quite nearly killed me. In the long run, it will make you cry, make you crazy, fall before your time. And the difference I won't argue right or wrong, but I have time to cry, my baby. You don't have to cry. I said cry, my baby. You don't have to cry. I said cry, my baby. You don't have to cry.
The first song they ever sang together. David Crosby, Stephen Stills, and Graham Nash. Here's Graham with me in the studio.
We're all unmarried, young, energetic, dedicated to the music, and totally interested in what other people were doing. And we also lived in the same physical location in Laurel Canyon.
Sure.
And therefore, you know, for breakfast, we call each other, you know, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon to go to breakfast, you know. And it was, as David said, as a community. Now it's, you know, we're older, we have children, we have wives, we have, we don't live in the same location, you know, so it's a little more difficult to hang out as a community.
Stephen Stills recalls this prolific period with me in the studio.
We would go over to everybody, each other's houses, and with half-finished songs or the various barest beginning of a verse, and what do you think of this? Bum, bum, bum. And everybody would just jump in and finish it up, you know, and help finish it up. If it made it, it was our own little filtering system. And whoever made up the song, initiated, usually just kept credit for it because we didn't really care at that time. And Graham was particularly adept at the little finishing lines, those little touches right at the end of a phrase that really put it well. And nobody remembers who wrote what.
With each of the multi-instrumentalists, there's really only one outside musician on the debut for Crosby, Stills, and Nash. That's drummer Dallas Taylor. And only one other voice, Mama Cass Elliott, who did background vocals on one song. I asked David, Stephen, and Graham how such strong individual talents managed to cooperate musically so well. Graham Nash goes first.
Because we have a common love of
music.
And we can also finish each other's sentences. Yeah.
Huey, Dewey, and Louie. We are very different, completely different guys. And I think that's one of the reasons the chemistry works. And we don't agree about stuff, about everything. We don't even agree about everything in music. And I think that's healthy. What it has caused is a very effervescent chemistry, one that's very active. You know,
and an ulcer.
In other people, several other people.
And we also have a very healthy respect for irreverence.
A healthy respect.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yes.
If it can be rubbed the wrong way, we will rub it.
What happens is, because we do, you know, we aren't afraid to express ourselves to each other, is we actually explore stuff. We've worked out a way of working with each other that pretty much demands that all of us have the respect of the others to where they will at least check out an idea that we have. We don't dismiss each other's ideas on face value, even if we disagree with them.
Because actually, the whole thing is absurd.
Yeah, it's got
to be fine. You know, some of the most interesting tapes that we've ever made is that during the first album, we would continue to run a wild two-track of the sessions.
Wild track, sure.
And
the conversations.
Some of those conversations are just unbelievably funny. I'm telling you, there's some stuff on those tapes that if it ever gets out, we'll be dead.
I mean, it's I think there's somebody from Spinal Tap must have heard that.
Yeah. Helplessly hoping her harlequin hovers nearby, awaiting a word. Gasping at glimpses of gentle true spirit, he runs, wishing he could fly, only to trip at the sound of goodbye. Wordlessly watching, he waits by the window and wonders at the empty place inside. Heartlessly helping himself to her bad dreams, he worries, did he hear a goodbye, or even hello? They are one person, they are two alone, they are three together, they are for each other. Stand by the stairway, you'll see something certain to tell you. Confusion has its cause. Love isn't lying, it's loose in a lady who lingers, saying she is lost and choking on hello. They are one person, they are two alone, they are three together, they are four each other.
That's Helplessly Hoping from the debut from Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Still to come, David, Stephen, and Graham discuss the remarkable artistic freedom they had and take stock in it. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and you'll find lots more from Crosby, Stills, Nash, even Young at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. In the Studio.
It's been a long time coming. It's going to be a long time gone.
That was David Crosby's original, jazzier, more up-tempo version of a song he wrote, Long Time Gone, which appears on the debut from Crosby, Stills, and Nash. I'm Redbeard. In 1969, it was unheard of for rock musicians to produce their own recordings. Label executives were very reluctant to let young musicians control song choice, musicianship, and recording. Crosby, Stills, and Nash were among the first to be allowed to produce themselves. Graham Nash goes first, followed next by David Crosby, and finally Stephen Stills.
We insisted that we would make our own record. Because who else could produce us, really?
Yeah, he'd have to have a flak vest and a 12-gauge anyway. We by that time, had made a few records. You know, Graham had made quite a few. And Stephen and I had both made several. And we were getting the hang of it, you know. And we wanted to do it ourselves. We didn't want somebody else trying to cram it into the old mold, you know, because we were trying to break all of that and trying to make stuff that was, you know, new. I mean, if we'd gone in and told any established producer at that time that we wanted to make a track 7 minutes and 22 seconds long that was nothing but three-part vocal and acoustic guitar with bass. Okay, they would have said, no, it needs a little tambourine on the fast part, maybe some tuba up here and two of these.
And you know what, the truth is that we'd already tried it. We recorded Helplessly Hoping and In the Morning When You Rise in New York City before we ever went to make that first record.
Neil Young and I found out real quick about Hollywood producers and them kind of guys. We knew that we had to, I'll never forget it, it was the first session, the first song of the first Buffalo Springfield record. We played this song, and the first comment is, guys, it's too long, play it faster.
That's how
Neil and I looked at each other. Neil and I looked at each other with absolute just got our chins back up off of the floor, walked out in the hall, and said, "We got to learn how to do this." That's a true story.
My God!
I mean, we were up against mentalities, man, that did not understand what the story was at all. And believe me, I mean, you know, the piece of music I was talking about was Sweet Judy Blue Eyes.
Yes, I really
and it did
it.
Rather well.
It did pretty good.
Yeah, you know, people did kind of like it.
Kinda.
And if we had gone to a producer and said that's what we wanted to do, 7 minutes, 22 seconds, acoustic guitar and one bass part, they would have said, "You're out of your tree."
Getting to the point where I'm no fun anymore.
I am sorry.
Sometimes it hurts so badly I must cry out loud.
I am lonely.
I am yours, you are mine, you are what you are.
Give back it
hard. Remember what we've said and done and felt about each other.
Oh, babe, have mercy.
Don't let the past remind us of what we are not now.
I am not dreaming.
I am yours, you are mine, you are what you are.
You make it hard.
Tearing yourself away from me now, you are free, and I am crying. This does not mean I don't love you. I do. That's forever. Yes, and for always.
I am yours. You are mine. You are what you are.
You make it hard.
Something inside is telling me that I've got your secret.
Are you still listening?
Fear is the lock and laughter the key to your heart.
And I love you.
I am yours, you are mine, you are what you are.
You make it hard, and you make it hard.
What have you got to-
you've got to lose.
Can I tell it like it is?
Yes,
listen to me, baby. It's my heart that's a song and it's a dying, and that's what I had to do.
I've got an answer. I'm going to fly away. What have I got to lose? Will you come see me Thursdays and Saturdays?
Hey, hey, hey.
What have you got to lose? Throat sparrow, sing the song, don't be long, thrill me to the marrow. Voices of the angel ring around the moon. Asking me, said she's so free. How can you catch the sparrow? Lacy, lilting, leery, losing love, lamenting. Change my life, make it right, be my lady.
Several written by Stephen Stills about his failed romance with folk singer Judy Collins back then. That's Crosby, Stills, and Nash with Sweet Judy Blue Eyes. Here's David Crosby, followed by Stephen Stills.
We had a freedom to experiment that gave us a lot of that first record. That it was the reason that that record sounded so completely different than what other people were doing. You got to remember, this was the year of the guitar player. This was the year of Hendrix and Clapton. Everybody wanted to be the Who.
Well, that part of Hollywood hasn't changed.
Yeah, they still want
the next.
Yeah, they wanted us to go along with the fad, and I mean, they would have wanted us to go along with the fad and fashion, you know, and we were completely other than that. We were using chord progressions and kinds of chords that people simply did not use. We were doing three-part harmony, which had not been done, period, at all.
With this year seeing a sort of harmonic convergence with Graham Nash's popular book, Crosby, Stills, and Nash's anniversary at Woodstock coming up this summer, and the long-awaited Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young 1974 tour recordings, Graham Nash notes the historical implications.
Because this is an anniversary of us, of that first record and of our first going out on tour, we can only take it as writers and composers and performers as a great compliment, because I got to tell you, Cary Grant, we're not. Mel Gibson, we're not. You know what I'm saying? So something must be pulling the kids in constantly. And that something has got to be the music, because that's all there is up there. It's three guys who have written songs that are close to our hearts, that are as real as we can possibly make them, that help ourselves, you know, with our own internal problems, and hopefully help people out there who may have similar problems or similar feelings and emotions. So we're just taking it as a great compliment. What are we doing right? Because, as you say, we still managed to have been going out for years, apart from the 1 year that David was in jail there, which was pretty hard to go out and tour, unless we wanted to do the Folsom Prison live album tour, you know. When we see our audience lately, we're seeing 14-year-old kids and we're seeing 60-year-old people, and everyone in between. So it means to us as composers that our music is A, what we've always believed it to be, more important than the three of us, and B, and more important to the audience than whether we're fighting with each other or whether we don't like each other this week or whether we're in love with each other this week. The music is the central core to our existence.
After a storied life and career, David Crosby still believes that music does have the power to change the world.
It was a strange time. It was a good time artistically. That much strong feeling, you know, civil rights too was still
cooking was
at
a
that point.
Big issue.
And that much strong feeling about issues generates good art. So we had a lot of stuff to feel and write about. For an artist, that's prime stuff. That's
fertile ground.
Yeah, fertile ground. I wish we had as much idealism going now in the country as we did then. I long for it, you know. I love to see principles. I love to see ideals. I love to see people caring about stuff. You know, a set of values is the essence for being a decent human being.
I agree. Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Without it, you know, if you just get this laissez-faire kind of, you know, I don't give a damn attitude, then you don't have a citizen and you don't have much of a person.
It's been a long time coming. It's going to be a long time gone.
I need a peace to be alone. Appears to be alone. Appears to be alone.
Time is a long, 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 long time before the dawn.
Yeah.
love is to be in love.
Time, such a long, 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 long time before that dawn.
On the night of Robert F. Kennedy's June 1968 assassination in California, that's Crosby, Stills, and Nash with Long Time Gone. I'm Redbeard. I'll be back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests, David Crosby, Stephen Stills, and Graham Nash. In the Studio is written by Joe Rhodes and Redbeard, produced by Redbeard for Bearded Fish Productions. All rights reserved. Copyright 2014. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and check out more interviews and live performances by the biggest names in rock at inthestudio.net.